Okay, good morning, Richie. Hope you had a good weekend. The plan for today and actually the rest of the course is to look now for the inverse to the derivative. So far, we looked at derivatives and we defined them as limits of difference quotients. Or in other words, geometrically, that was just slopes. Okay, and we defined some spaces that were functions that were derivatives, and we defined a space of functions that could be differentiated and our derivative took one and gave us the other. And what we want to do now is invert it. So next, invert the derivative. Okay, so we want to go back the other direction. And as you know from Math 21, the way to do that is an integral. So so this is integrals. Right, so the basic idea, of course, from that class is the fundamental theorem of calculus that the integral from say zero to x of f prime of y dy is often equal to f of x. Okay, and so that's the kind of thing we're trying to get. And but the curious thing and the clever observation of Newton was that these inverses, instead of having to do with slopes, have to do with areas. So this is relate to areas. Okay, and so the picture, of course, is something like this. If we have just a y equals x for our function here, and we take the area between a zero and x, then we get one over two x squared. And of course, the derivative of that is just this function at y equals x. So that's what we're trying to do. And that's what we did in Math 21. And in Math 21, of course, we tried to find ways that we could do those with formulas. And we got some ways, but it was hard. And that's just the way it is with integrals. But what we're gonna try to do now is not so much look for formulas, but just like we did with derivatives, we're gonna try to understand for which class of functions this makes sense. Okay, so it makes sense to start looking at integrals. So we want to explore which functions we can integrate. So that's going to be the goal. So just like with derivatives, we're going to basically try to expand the class of functions that we consider beyond the algebraic ones that arise in our first course on this material, Math 21. Okay, so to that end, there's a lot of notation. All right, so the next thing I want to do is introduce a bunch of notation for finding areas, or in other words, Riemann integrals. So notation for Riemann integrals so let's see, one of the things that that do get used in Riemann integrals are sup and inf, and to remind yourself of properties of that, there's section 11.1. So feel free to look that over if you need to go back and look at that. I'm going to start in 11.2. So see 11.1 for facts about sup and inf. Because those are what we're going to make use of in attempting to do these area computations. All right, so to the notation. So definition So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take the region that we want to integrate, and we're going to chop it up into little pieces like this, and then use boxes on top of those pieces. And so the first thing to study is how is the ways to chop that up and to give names to all the bits there. So let me start by doing that. Those will be called partitions. So we're going to start with some interval here. So if we have an interval AB, then a subset of that interval will be called a partition. So let me say P is a subset of AB. And the properties that we need are it should contain both of the ends. And it should just have a finite number of points in there. And is finite. Okay, and then we will call that a partition. So I have to call P a partition. And it's a partition of the interval AB. Okay, so that's the notation, ways to break things up. All right, and associated to that are the names of various some notation to go with that. So we will write P, well, it's just a finite lit, set of points and they're in an interval, so I can order them, and let me do that. So I'm gonna take P to be, well, it's gotta contain A, because that's one of the rules, and so I'll call that X0. And then the next one is bigger, so I'll call that X1, and I just order them. And they're only finitely many, so it ends somewhere, and we'll call that one Xn, and the last one, of course, has to be B, because both endpoints are in there. Okay, so this is the way we'll typically write it. Associated to that, with associated intervals, okay, so those will be the intervals between those points. Let me write them as I sub I. Okay, and so I sub one is gonna be the first interval, and it's gonna go from zero to one, and then the next one's gonna go from one to two. And so those are gonna be all my intervals. So each interval is gonna go from I sub X sub I minus one up to X sub I. Okay, so we chop up our big interval into lots of little ones. So that's the names for those little intervals of length. Okay, each one has some length. And that's a useful property of it that we're gonna use a lot. So we'll give it a name. So let me call it little l sub I for the length. And it's just gonna be, of course, the difference between the ends. That's what the length of an interval is. So x I minus one. That'll be the length of the interval. All right, let's see. So the only other two more bits of notation that I want, and I'll do some examples. So I'll write, pi for all partitions, capital pi stands for P for partition, AB. So this is all partitions of the interval AB. So it's the set of all partitions. Of the interval AB. So in other words, we will write P is an element of pi. Right, it's the set of all the partitions. All right, and the last thing is that I want to somehow compare partitions. If I have one partition here, and then I add some more points so that it has smaller intervals, all of which are stacked inside of the original one, then I'm going to call that a refinement. And so if P is contained in Q, so I add some more points, are both partitions, so they're both elements of the set of partitions of AB, then Q is called a refinement of P. So that's a bunch of notation. Let me do a few examples just so that it's clear how that works. So I'll just do one here. Hopefully that's enough. And then I'll give you a chance to play with some in the breakout room in a few minutes. But let me start with just one example, just so we have something. let's take the interval 0 to 3. Okay, so this is equal to my a here is 0 and b is equal to that 3 there. And I want to take a partition. In the partitions on 0, 3, okay, so that means that I have, it's a subset, and I'm going to take P equal to, and so I'm going to take, let's see, let me draw a little picture here. So here's my interval 0 to 3, and I'm just going to choose some points inside of there. Let me take, so obviously it has to have 0, that was one of our rules, and then I can add some other points. Let me take a half and 2, say, and then it has to have 3, again, that was a rule. So those are my points that will be in P. And so then if I go back to my notation over there, these are my X's, right? And this one is X0, and this one is X1, and this is X2. And then I go up to X3. So 3 is also equal to N, right? So that's the example fitting with all of that notation. All right, and so let me just finish up a little bit more of the notation. So is it clear what I1 is here? So I go back over here, and these are supposed to be my intervals into which I've broken it. So which is a, is it clear what the endpoints of that first interval are?
It would be from 0 to 1 half.
Exactly, right? So everyone see that? So it's just the first 2 points of my partition, right? So 0 to 1 half, just as suggested. So this would be the interval from a 0 to 1 half. And of course, the length of that is then a half. So L1 is a half, okay? And so then we keep going. And while there are, and this is sometimes confusing, there are 4 points in my P, but how many intervals are there?
3.
Yeah, there are only 3, right? So it's sometimes confusing to get that plus or minus 1 again. Cause some confusion with the sums. Okay, so there's just 3 of them. So I1, I2, I3. And they are, of course, the ones that are bounded by my points in my partition. And then they have lengths, which you can compute. It's just the differences there. So this one's 3 halves, and the last one's just 1. Okay, so that's the notation. And let's see, so I guess that used everything except I didn't have a refinement. So let me go add a refinement. So let's take a Q. And if I want it to be a refinement, the rule is I have to have all the points I had before, right? So I have to have a 0, and I have to have a 1 half, and I have to have a 2, and I have to have a 3. And then I can add any more points. Let me just add one more, but I could have added more of them if I wanted to. So this is a refinement of P. Okay, any questions about the notation for partitions? So that's the notation. Okay. All right, so then I want to add some more notation and then let you play with it a little bit in a breakout room just to get some practice using the names. Now, of course, the goal was to find areas. And so far, all we've done is chop up the domain here into little pieces. And now we want to talk about the area. So we're going to put rectangles on top of that and find areas. And so those are going to be the next bit of notation. All right, so definition. So now we need a function whose area we're going to compute. And for that, we're going to take a bounded function. So f is bounded on this interval AB. And we have some partition of that same interval AB. Okay, so we have we have some function now here on top. Okay, and I'm trying to estimate its area. All right, and so I'm going to do that, and let me just draw a little picture. So the idea is that I've got these points chosen, and I'm gonna take these boxes here that are big enough that they surely contain all the area under my curve, okay? So so that's gonna be the picture that I want. And so I'll just write that down now as a formula. So then we write U for the upper one. Okay, and it's going to be the sum. So again, we just computed that the number of boxes is n, right? Which is one fewer than the number of points. So we're going to take I runs from one to n, so the number of boxes. Okay, and when I look at one of these boxes and I want to find its area, right? So it's got two things, it's got a width and it's got a height, okay? And so the width is something we already have a name for, that's these L's, right? So we're just going to take the width is just the L, so this is going to be L sub I for the width. But then we have to figure out the height, okay? And can you see what the height is going to be? So if I take one of these, oops, and I want to figure out the height, I'm going to take something involving my function f, right? So this will be the height. And what I'm going to do is take the largest value that I see, okay? So that's going to be the sup of f. Okay, and which points am I going to plug in? Well, I only care about what's happening inside of my interval, okay? So the sup over a inside of the interval, I sub capital I sub little I. Okay, any questions about that? So that should correspond to this red picture here where I take the highest points inside of each of my intervals. Okay, that's supposed to be an upper estimate. And then I also want to try to sandwich it between two things. So I'm also going to take a lower estimate. And so I'm going to also take this lowest bits, in this case, they're all the left-hand side, which will be my lower estimate, and for and I'll name that L. So let me call this A and then B. I'm also going to have the lower estimate. Okay, and if I want to get the lower estimate, is it clear what will be different between the upper and lower estimates? So as I go along here,
would it be the infimum instead of the supremum?
That's exactly correct. Everything else is the same. I still have the same number of boxes. I still have the same width, but as suggested, instead of looking for the supremum now, I'm going to look for the infimum. Otherwise, it's exactly the same. So everything is otherwise the same. So this will be the sum I equals 1 to n, same width, L sub I, but now we're going to look at the infimum over a in this same interval of my function f of a. So those are my approximations based on a partition. Okay. All right. Now, of course, the partitions are just a means to an end. We really care about the area, and this is just a way to get there. So next thing to define is what those areas are. And so C, I'm going to write just U without a partition. So now I'm going to get rid of my partitions and try to get an upper bound for the total area. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at all the partitions. Now, if I take a refinement, if I take a finer partition here and add a partition, what's going to happen to that red area, right? So now I have a new region, right? And this is the top there and that's the top there. Is that red area getting bigger or smaller when I get this more refined partition? Is that clear? So if I add another point here so that I have more intervals, and I look then at the upper estimate, I guess it wasn't that clear from my picture, but the idea is that the more pieces I add, the more bits I get, I can chop out of the top here. So it gets smaller and smaller. It's kind of settles down on top of my function. Okay, so what I would like then as my best estimate for the upper bound is the infimum. So the smallest thing I can get over all the choices of partition. So P is a partition of AB. And I'm going to take the infimum of all the upper bounds I get. So F, so it's an int of a sup. Okay. And similarly, of course, for the lower bound. Oh, and sorry, this also gets its a secondary name. we're optimistic that this is a lot like the integral, so we'll call it that. So this will be the, but it's not quite, so it's going to be the upper integral. So I'm going to put an upper bar on top to indicate that this is my upper estimate. And it's going to run from x equals a to b, f of x dx. So that's another notation for the upper limit there. And then similarly, of course, for the lower one, so LF will be the soup over the partitions of the L given by a particular partition. And once again, we're going to give it an integral name, but we're going to denote the fact that it's the lower estimate by putting a lower bar on it, like so. Okay, so that's the notation. Okay, and then finally, some of the time this is actually the same, and then it's actually an integral. So that's the final definition here. So E, if we have those being equal, so U of F is equal to L of F, then we write this number as the integral without any upper or lower bars, just the standard notation that you're familiar with, integral of f of x dx is equal to this number. And we say that f is Riemann integrable. And actually, since that's the only form of integrability we're going to talk about, I'll sometimes just drop the word Riemann. Okay, and finally, we're going to build a new space of functions, just as we have studied the D's and the C's, spaces of functions. This gives us a new space that we're going to study, which is the Riemann integrable functions. And write F an element of Rint for Riemann integrable functions on the interval AB, okay? So these are the new space that we start. Okay, and let me just indicate where we're headed with this. Actually, maybe I'll just do an example. Let me start with an example and then we can indicate where we're headed. So, and I'll give you a little time to try to play around with this example in breakout rooms. So for breakout rooms compute, okay, so let's just take a case, a simple case like the one we started with. So we know what the answer is, and we just want to see that all the notation agrees. All right, so we'll take AB to be just 0, 1, just like we did at the beginning, and take my function to just be the f of x is equal to x. Okay, so just that first integral. And that's the one we want to approximate. And so I'm going to take some partitions. Let me give a whole bunch of partitions. So this is a little bit more complicated. So I'll take a P sub N. So that'll be the partition that has N plus one points in it. The first one being zero, the next one being one over N, and then two over N, et cetera, all equally spaced all the way up to one. Okay, it has to have zero and one in it, and it's got a bunch of other things. So that's the a partition. Oops, good pi. Right, so those are partitions, a bunch of them. Okay, and so then I want you to find the following things from this setup. So A, find the intervals. So that is mostly figuring out the notation. So I sub I. B, I want you to find the lengths of those intervals. Okay, so again, that's just tracking through what the notation is. So then more interesting, we want to actually estimate, compute some of these upper and lower Riemann sums. And so let me compute, let me have you compute U, F at PN and D, LF at PN. Okay. And then E, the limit, so the actual integrals So this is a UF. All right. Okay, and then one more question. F is for which N and M are PN and PM refinements of one another? Okay, so for which so PN a refinement. So remember that means it has to contain all of the other ones. Refinement of PM. Okay, so those are the questions. Actually, I want to add one more fact because it's helpful for doing this, and so I don't want you to have to worry about it too much. And so, so let me just note. So does anyone remember what this sum is? So I'm going to take the sum. The Riemann sums involve lots of sums, and so here's the sum that comes up. And so see if you remember what it is. I'm going to take the integers I equals 1 to n of I, and so what is that equal to? So for example, the sum I equals 1 to 3 of I is just 1 plus 2 plus 3, right? But so does anyone remember the formula for this sum all the way up to n?
Isn't it n times n plus 1 over 2?
Correct. And so that's what's going to come into the computation. So that's a good one to remind yourself of. Okay, let me just give you a few minutes to try to answer those questions. Any questions about what I want you to look at for the next few minutes? Okay, let's see. So starting at the top. So let's see. What about A here? So what is interval I sub I? What are its two endpoints? Right, so this should be it. Yeah.
I said I minus 1 over n and then I over n.
Correct. Okay, does everyone agree with that? All right, so then the first one is going to go from 0 to 1 over n, the second one from 1 over n to 2 over n, etc. Okay. Right, so it's good to get the indexing clean there. Okay, what about the lengths?
The lengths are all 1 over n.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're all the same. They don't have to be for a partition, but in this case, they are all 1 over n. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so then the more interesting one, so C. So when we start doing this sum, right? So let's see, so U, F, P, N, right? So if we look at the definition up here, right? So how many terms does this have? Is that clear? Yeah, I see it in the chat box there. Right, it's exactly as written here, n terms in this case. So this is a sum, I equals 1 to n. Okay, and let's see, what's supposed to come next? Next, we're supposed to put the length, and we just computed that the lengths are the same for all of them. So we have a 1 on n. Okay, but now the interesting part, we're supposed to put the sup. Okay, so we're going to figure out what the sup of my function is over the interval I sub I here.
Wouldn't it just be I over n?
Mm-hmm. Does everyone agree with that? It's going to be this one here. First of all, it's an increasing function, so it's going to take its maximum value over here. And secondly, the function is just the function x. So when I look at I over n, the value is also I over n, right? So it's just I over n. Let me write in two steps, but that's exactly right. So let's take f, since it's increasing, it's going to be f evaluated at I over n. But f of x is just x because that's the function. So this is the sum I equals 1 to n of 1 on n I over n. Okay, and so then let's see, I can simplify that. I can pull out the n squared and I get the sum I equals 1 to n of I. And did anyone simplify that and figure out what the answer one gets? Yes, okay, everyone agree with that? So when you plug in this formula here, right? So that's gonna be an n squared over 2 plus an n over 2, and then divided by n squared, you're gonna get the 1/2, which is what you expected, because that's the correct area that we know from what area of triangles, but we're off by a little bit, and the amount that we're off by is 1 over 2n, a little bit too big. That's what we expect, because this is the upper interval bound, okay? All right, and how is that different from part D? If I go to the lower bound, what changes?
It would be f of I minus 1 over n.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'm going to agree with that. So this is the same sum, 1 to n, the same length, 1 over n. But now the minimum is achieved at the beginning of the interval and not the end of it. So it's an I minus 1 over n, okay? And of course, the function is once again the same function. So 1 over n, and it's just I minus 1 over n, okay? And so then we end up with, again, we can pull out the 1 on n squared, and we get the sum of I minus 1. Or another way to write that is the sum of I, where I now runs from 0 up to n minus 1. Okay, another way to say it. Okay, and what is that one? If you run it through, it's a one over n less, so it's a one over two minus one over two n, which is again nice in that it's close to a half, but a little bit less, which is what we expect from a lower estimate. Okay, and so then we take our limits and we get just a half, which is the area of the triangle, which is what one had hoped. Okay. Integral from 0 to 1 of x dx. Okay, great. So that's that. And so the only thing left is a f here. So did anyone understand what it takes to make it 1fn a refinement of pn a refinement of a pm? So for example, if I take p3, so that's the one that's got 0, a third, 2/3, and 1. Which ones would be a refinement of that? Or what would be one that's a refinement of that?
Wouldn't it just be for all m greater than n?
So that's not quite right. So then you'll have more intervals. But if I look at f4, right? So f4 is going to have 0 and 1/4 and a half and 3/4 and 1. So it's got more intervals, but it doesn't have all the same points the original one did, right? So I'm missing the 1/3 and the 2/3. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. Did someone give an answer? Okay, so if I want one that contains the 1/3 and the 2/3 and whatnot, so 4 is not going to work, 5 is not going to work, but 6 will, right? Because then I'll have 1/6 and a third and a half. So what I need is that n is some multiple of m, and then I'll get it as a refinement. So f, n needs to be a multiple of m. So e.g. P6 contains P3. Does that make sense? Are there any questions about the notion of a refinement? So it's not just that there are more bits, it's that it contains all the original ones as well. All right, so let me then indicate a couple of facts. So first of all, the intuition of what we're trying to get, and then a few facts, and then some examples. So so the goal, again, we were trying to invert the derivative, right? That was our original goal. So we want to sort of compare, invert derivatives. And remember that we had this space of functions that were derivatives, and we had a space of functions that were differentiable, and we could get a derivative by differentiating something that's differentiable, right? So we had d0, and that was obtained by differentiating things that were differentiable. Okay, but now we have this new space, and so which one should we be comparing the Riemann integrable functions to? Does that make sense? So the idea is supposed to be that the Riemann integral undoes the derivative, right? So we take a derivative and the Riemann integral is supposed to go back. So which functions would it be handy to be able to integrate if we wanted to do that? So we take a function here, we differentiate it, right? And then we want to be able to go back, right? That would be our goal, to go back and integrate it, right? So what we're going to try to do is compare to these functions that are derivatives, right? So we're going to take, what we would like is if we had something that was a derivative, we'd like to be able to integrate it and get back to where we started. Because that's what the fundamental theorem of calculus says works in some settings. So that's our, so we want to compare this to the things that are derivatives. Okay, so if we add names for these are the integrable functions. And these are the derivatives. Okay, and in particular, we'd like to compare integral of the derivative. So that's one thing to compare. And then the next thing to compare is the integral of the derivative, say zero to x of f prime of y dy. So which function is that supposed to be close to? So I took a derivative and then I integrate. Is that clear? So again, this is supposed to be the inverse. So it should get us back to the function we started with, right? And so we'd like to know in what settings that's true. So that would be the fundamental theorem of calculus. And often it's true. And we're trying to make it true as often as we can. Okay, and then the final thing that we'd like to try to do is we have a notion of how big, yes, I see someone got it in the chat, good. We have a notion of how big a function is, and we'd like to compare that to the settings that we had before, whether we're building a nice Banach space out of this. So compare these Riemann integrable functions together with this notion of a bigness, which will be the integral from A to B of absolute value of my function dx. And we'd like to compare that to a Banach space. Okay, so that's where we're headed. That's the picture to keep in mind. Okay, so let me write down a few theorems and some examples, and we'll get some indication of how close we are to that for now, and we'll keep doing that. Okay, so some theorems. I guess these are theorem 11.20. If we have a bounded function and we have partitions, one of which is a refinement of the other. So f is in bounded functions on AB, and we have p contained in q partitions. Then we can relate upper and lower bounds associated with these two partitions. So if I take the upper bound associated to the finer one, the one with more bits to it, so I've gotten closer to my function. So that's going to be a better approximation, therefore smaller than what I had with the coarse rough approximation. And similarly, the lower bound is going to be a better approximation. And better means now it's bigger because it's getting closer to my function. So bigger than or equal to LFP. Okay, so that's what you would hope once you track through all the signs, and it's true. Okay, and then proposition 11.21, if we have a bounded function And we have any two partitions. Okay, so notice the difference here. Here I'm requiring one to be a subset of the other, right? So one of them has to be a partition, a refinement. Here I'm making no such restriction. So these can be just any two, all right? Okay, so that's the big difference here. But now I can relate the lower bound, which you would hope is gonna be smaller than the upper bound, and it is. So this is a less than or equal to the upper bound. And the beauty is that I can use whichever partition I like to the lower bound, whichever partition I like to the upper bound, and I'm still gonna get one, the smaller, the L1 to be smaller than the U1. Okay. And then what follows from that is, of course, the main thing that we really cared about, because we really do just want to get a fact about our functions and not so much about the partitions. And that says that if I have F bounded, just like above, then I always have that the lower integral is less than or equal to the upper integral. Okay, whenever I take those bounds. And that'll follow from 21. Most of the work is going to be 20 here. Okay, but I'll do that next time. First, let me just do some examples so you get some intuition, all right? So the examples really help. So so here's a few of them. So one, this is the one we just did. So what did it say? We said the integral from 0 to 1 of x dx. And two, I'm going to take the integral from 0 to 1, always will be 0 to 1, of the function f of x dx. So this one here is a triangle, and this one is going to be a step function. So I'm going to take f of x is equal to either 0 or 1. So 1 if x is less than or equal to a half, and 0 if x is bigger than a half. Okay, and 3. I'm going to list four functions here. So integral of g of x dx from 0 to 1, and 4, the integral of h of x dx from 0 to 1. Okay, and the next one is going to be just 1 at 0 and otherwise 0. All the rest are going to be just 0 or 1. This one is 1 if x is equal to 0 and 0 otherwise. And h of x is going to be 1 if x is rational and 0 otherwise. Okay, and I want to just compute the integrals of those four things. All right, so let's see. So let's just start with the first one. So what's the integral of that first one? We just finished computing it, so hopefully that's clear. It just constitutes remembering what we're doing here. So what about that first one? Yeah, so we just computed that, and that is correct. We got a half, and the half is the right answer, and that's that area. Good. What about the next one? So the next one is 1 for the first half, and then 0 for the second half. And again, it's a half. The thing to take home message about this one is, this function is not a derivative, right? So integrals turn out to be a little bit easier to do if you only care about their existing an answer, not finding a formula, which you know is hard from 21. But it turns out that the integrals are more common. So this is integrable. So f is a Riemann integrable, but it's not a derivative. Okay, so in our goal here of comparing these two pictures, so far, we've found some more things that are integrable that are not necessarily derivatives. Okay, what about the next one? What's the integral of this function, which is just 1 at 0 and 0 everywhere else?
Would it just be 0?
Yes, it's just 0. Does everyone see that? So So how do we get to zero? Well, we can take smaller and smaller intervals here, and we're going to get smaller and smaller area for our upper bound. And the lower bounds are always going to be zero. So the upper bound can, it becomes smaller and smaller, and the limit is therefore zero. So this one is zero. And the interesting thing to take home here is that f is g is not zero. But the integral of the absolute value of g, because g is positive, equals zero. And so that's that means that this isn't quite a Banach space, right? Because we have a non-zero function whose norm is zero. So that's a bit of a problem for making it a Banach space. So this is not a Banach space. And in the next course on functional analysis, not in this class, there's a way to get around that, and that's a bit of a trick, but that one does have to do, because in the end, you actually do want to end up with a Banach space, so, but it's not, and this is one of the problems. Okay, and what about this last one? So this is a hard function to graph. It's one at every rational point, and it's zero at all the other points, which is most points, but still, there are a lot of rational points. So what about this one? So what is its integral? It's a bit of a trick.
Is it zero?
One of them is. Which one is zero?
Probably x not in the rationals.
So here's what I mean. So the answer is that this does not exist. But there were two other things we wrote down that were integral-like. We wrote down an upper integral, and we wrote down a lower integral. Right? This one is another name for u. And we wrote down a lower integral where we just use the minima. And one of those is zero. So which one of those is zero?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so here's the picture. So I look inside any interval here, my I here that I have in one of my partitions. And every segment interval has got some rational number in it, right? So for every interval, the maximum, the sup is going to be one and the inf is going to be zero. For every single interval. So whenever I do an upper estimate, I'm going to get one for every single piece of it. And whenever I do a lower estimate, I'm going to get zero for every single piece of it. So my lower estimates are all going to be zero. And so this limit is going to be zero. And my upper estimates are all going to be one. And so that upper limit is going to be one. So that's a good one to try to think through. But this is a good indication of a function that's not Riemann integrable. So that's the take home message about H here. This is not the Riemann integrable function, okay? Because that's upper and lower bounds are different. That's another thing that actually does get fixed when you go on to the next course in this material. But for now, we're going to have to live with the fact that one's not Riemann integrable, and you get two different numbers. Okay, sorry, I'm out of time. I will stick around for a while.